John Berger, you started this game in a way with your observation years ago that that death picture of Che Guevara was exactly the image that Rembrandt had painted in the anatomy lesson. What is this about images that are so different and yet so much the same?
It's as though across time, images, I mean, it sounds strange to say that, but images recognize each other or pay tribute to each other. But, you know, then you say, how can images do that? And is it the photographer who did it consciously? But, it looks as though it isn't quite like that. It's to do with coincidences. And coincidences are what Einstein called God working incognito.
There's the images talking to each other, or the photographers or the painters talking to each other. What about us in the looking, making our own connections?
It seems to me that because we're such verbal creatures, we remember quotations or things said, we are more aware of what's in our heads in relation to that. When it comes to images, I mean, they are stacked there and we almost forget them, or completely forget them, until suddenly another image calls one up. If you go into a painter's studio or a visual artist studio, because maybe he's a video artist, maybe he's an installation artist, if he's good, you will find somewhere reproductions, poor ones, postcards of, I don't know, Piero della Francesca, or maybe a 16th century Chinese draftsman. And these are all mixed up with things that he is doing and with notes that he's written to himself and all kinds of other bric-a-brac. But suddenly, when you see these images in that context, you realize that actually for him, when he's trying to work in this great, great solitude, which creation always implies, is feeling these images and what they were about as contemporary, as companions. And maybe all this is really quite interesting and important today, because it shows how the past coexists with the present and, of course, also with the future. And that's important to emphasize today, because we live in a culture of the free market, of globalization, and so on, where the past is more or less dismissed as obsolete, end of history, etc., etc., and the future is reduced to the next election. Maybe it is very important to remember that the past coexists in each of us with the present and with the future.
Speaking of the past and of the primeval images, horizons, and pictures of death, as in the case of Che Guevara, or pictures of women, it makes me wonder sort of what are the fundamental images in our ancestral heads, and how many are there?
I think countless images, first of all, in everybody's head. In fact, they're impossible to count. And when you say ancestral or primeval, you already, with those terms, in a funny sort of way, pushing them back into the past. Mm. Whereas in fact, you know, they are present. It's not a question of theme. It's a question of always the same problem. And there, I would quote the French woman philosopher, Simone Weil. She says something like, affliction, the affliction of somebody else, and the truth are strangely connected, because both are suppliants, both are asking for attention, and yet are bound to stand speechless before the eyes of the beholder. That is part of the human condition. Mm. It is that which is constant, not any particular theme about which there are arguments. And what is, I think, important in that quotation, is that she chooses the response to the affliction of the other, that's to say, somebody other than oneself, which is there as fundamental as any truth. And this is something which is forgotten.
This is fascinating, because are you saying that the continuity or the connection between these images is not the shape or the color or the horizon, but some deeper feeling inside them?
Yes, I am saying that. Yes, of course. I mean, it doesn't necessarily, it's not always to do with the fiction and truth. I mean, it can also be to do with something else. It can also be to do with desire and hope. It's not just visually formal.
Teach us, John Berger, how to look at images on television, in real life, in art, and to see not just the resemblances, but the emotional and the instructive deeper connections among things. Only connect, as E.M. Forster says. How do we learn to do this?
First, one has to be open, because we're talking about images, and we're talking about things made by people. This means being open to other people, all other people. And in that openness, there can no longer be any distinction between us and them. And we live at a moment when those distinctions between us and them are being continually emphasized. Us, in inverted commas, lovers of freedom. Them, terrorists. Us, atheists or Christians, and them, Islamics. Although that is very, very emphasized now, because of the enormous wealth and extent of the media. I mean, of course, that has been true often throughout history. Often. I mean, this is not uniquely contemporary, that. But it is in that distinction between us and them, on either side, that barbarism begins. Because as soon as that takes place in the mind of somebody, then you can have every kind of crime that follows. And it seems to me that in those images that have survived, it doesn't matter in what medium, in those images that survive, I mean, if there is, and it's not in all images, but when there is that recognition that what connects people is an infinite number of times more important than what separates them, then to recognize that, one has to be open in the way that I'm describing.
So it's good for our eyes, it's good for our politics too, perhaps.
Yes, of course, but it begins with our hearts and goes on to be skeptical about what we are told is in our in our hearts, as distinct from what we actually feel in them.
John Berger, you're a treat. This is a great pleasure to engage you.
Okay, well, it was very good to talk to you.